is number 76871, Brandon Hansen versus the State of Nevada. This is an appeal filed by Mr. Hansen filing his conviction for first-degree murder. And the court has set this for argument. We only identified one issue in our notice of setting this because that's the way that the brief seemed to be presented. Mr. Brooks, if you feel there's more than one issue, you know, feel free to refer to that. But if it's just the one, then I guess we'll have a very focused argument. All right, you can proceed.
Thank you. Chief Judge Gibbons, judges of the Court of Appeals, my name is Howard Brooks. I'm a Clark County Deputy Public Defender, and I represent Brandon Hansen. I am not reserving any rebuttal time. This is a direct appeal of a first-degree murder with use of a deadly weapon conviction. I want to emphasize this is a direct appeal. This is not an appeal of a post-conviction relief ruling. I say this because this case may be more interesting ultimately as a post-conviction relief case than it is as a direct appeal case. This case came to our office from a private lawyer who did the trial. That private lawyer did not contest any of the material facts presented by the state at trial, nor did he dispute liability for any of the other charged felonies beyond murder. The only argument made at trial was that it was unfair to convict Brandon Hansen of first-degree murder when he deserved to be convicted of something less than that. With that in mind, I'm going to do two things here. I'm going to review the facts, and then I will discuss the law of first- and second-degree murder. 32-year-old Brandon Hansen worked at a gym in Las Vegas. In 2017, he dated 21-year-old Michaela Reiner. He was very attached to her. In the summer of 2017, Hansen traveled to Japan where, despite his attachment to Reiner, he had a relationship with a Japanese woman. And while still in Japan, he learned that Reiner had moved on and found a relationship with someone else. And this information, this development, obviously disturbed him. He became depressed. He told his mother in a text message, "I am 9,000 miles from home with no one to talk to about this, and I just feel horrible." He also texted his mom, "Relationships have been so far and few between for me, and I am getting to the point where I'm believing that marriage and family are just not in the cards." So when he returned home, he was depressed. He saw a psychiatrist. He received a prescription for an antidepressant drug. He tried to get back together with Reiner. She was not interested. Hansen described his feelings to a friend. He said he was so depressed, he was so upset, and he said he was having, quote, murderous thoughts, unquote. He told a friend he was angry about the new boyfriend, and he wanted to punch him in the face. But please remember, despite these statements, Brandon Hansen had no criminal record and no history of violence. So things began to happen to Michaela Reiner. First, someone slashed the tires on her mother's car in the apartment complex. A note was left on the car that said, quote, "Fuck your alarm," unquote. Then about 2 weeks later, someone attacked the car owned by the new boyfriend. Someone slashed the tires, destroyed the antenna, defaced the body and bumper, cut wires in the engine, tore the spoiler off. The damage was more than $12,000, which totaled the vehicle. And then, on August 3rd, 2017, a person confronted Reiner in her garage at the apartment complex and stabbed her numerous times, killing her. The immediate suspect was Brandon Hansen. The police interviewed him, and he denied all responsibility. Then they executed a search warrant on his home and found in his bedroom what were apparently practice notes he had written, saying, quote, "fuck yo alarm," unquote. And that obviously connected him to the vandalism that had occurred in this case. The police also found what they called a suicide note. In that note, Hansen said he could not live without Michaela. But the note did not say he killed Michaela. Police testified at trial that they thought he was suicidal. They went to find him. They found him at his mother's home, I believe it was, or father's home. And when at the father's home, Hansen requested to talk to the police, and he went out and talked to them in the car, and he admitted killing Reiner. Please remember, the defense at trial did not dispute any of this evidence. The defense did file a motion to suppress his statement on the grounds that it was not voluntary, but that motion was denied, and it really became moot when the defense embraced these facts at trial, which meant that we weren't really contesting anything. So the defense at trial focused on one aspect, the state of mind of Brandon Hansen when he killed Michaela Reiner. Dr. Reutemann, a psychiatrist, testified, and he said that Hansen was very depressed about his breakup. He said Hansen's actions were consistent with someone acting in an extreme emotional state, not a rational state. He said Hansen was suffering from a major psychological disorder. The jury convicted Hansen of first-degree murder with use of a deadly weapon and the other associated felonies. So what does the law say about first- and second-degree murder? We all know that murder occurs when a person intentionally kills another human with malice. And once we have murder, it can be first degree or second degree. Nevada statutory law says first degree murder occurs when the killing is willful, deliberate, and premeditated. The killing is also first degree murder if it's felony murder, where it happens during the course of certain felonies, like robbery. So with regards to the willful, deliberate, and premeditated requirement, this court said in Byford v. State, the Nevada Supreme Court said in Byford v. State, that all three elements must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So if we have an intentional, malicious killing, and the state proves willfulness, deliberation, and premeditation, we have first-degree murder. But if we have an intentional, malicious killing, and one of those elements is not proven, then it's second-degree murder. Byford emphasized the importance of the deliberation requirement. A deliberate act, according to Byford, is one that involves a dispassionate weighing process and a consideration of consequences before acting. So the defense argued at trial, and I'm arguing today, that this killing was inherently passionate, not dispassionate. Dr. Reutemann testified that this act by Hansen was consistent with the person acting under extreme emotions. He said that a person suffering this disorder would have sleeplessness, loss of appetite, weight loss, hopelessness, helplessness, loss of interest in life, low energy, apathy. obviously a person in that condition is not in the best shape to carefully consider the consequences of what he was doing. In fact, in this trial, there is no evidence that Hansen considered the consequences of what he was doing. If we look at his suicide note, he said he wanted to be with Michaela forever and couldn't stand the thought of being without her. And yet the act of killing is in direct opposition to that thought. The defense argued that Hansen, who had no history of violence, was an unstable person when he returned from Japan. Seeing her with another person was tearing at his heart. He acted without careful thought, without deliberation, when he killed Reiner. So that was the argument at trial, and that's the argument on appeal. But obviously...
Mr. Brooks?
Yes.
Did the doctor admit at trial under cross-examination that even somebody with Mr. Hansen's condition could still plan a crime and that it wasn't for sure dispassionate as you've characterized it? In other words, if you can plan it and you look at the various pieces of circumstantial evidence in this case, there's indication of a plan.
That is absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. The state, the on cross-examination, the doctor said, obviously, some people in this condition can deliberate, can premeditate, and that is absolutely true. I'm aware there are several counterarguments to what I'm saying here, and I'm going to address
this. Let me ask you this, if you don't mind. And I think this is what you may have been alluding to at the beginning when you emphasized that this is a direct appeal and not a collateral habeas petition.
Yes.
The difference being, for the students here, in a collateral habeas petition, you can attack the performance of the trial counsel, but on a direct appeal, you can't. And I think this is where you're going with this, but if you look at the trial counsel here, who was not you, conceded that Mr. Hansen vandalized the car, or at least did not challenge that, a couple days before. And in a way, that's almost the best evidence of premeditation. He's planning this over days. And I know that you're kind of stuck with that, but that at least kind of gave the DA an argument. But so let me actually respond to that directly in the context of the case that you have it. Isn't that evidence, the fact that he vandalized the car days before the actual killing, of a plan that lasted several days at a time?
I agree with you 100%. As I was about to observe, there are two strong counterfactual arguments to what I'm saying here, and I'm going to address those. First, he said he was having murderous thoughts, and this was like a month before the killing. Obviously, if he was thinking about killing her and then he killed her, that would certainly suggest premeditation. When he vandalized the car prior to the killing, obviously that shows malice, the intent to harm her, and it also shows that, again, there's evidence of premeditation. But the key thing is the presence of premeditation alone does not constitute first-degree murder. No evidence overcomes the defendant's evidence that this act was fundamentally, in its nature, a passionate act, an unthinking act, and an action that was not deliberate. And while I certainly agree that the doctor's testimony cuts both ways, the fact is he described a condition that Hansen was experiencing which would help come to a conclusion that deliberation was absent. I have to address the issue of felony murder as well in this case.
One other quick question on the facts. What about the idea that he parked his car outside of the complex, squeezed his way through the fence, took his backpack with him, had this large knife in the backpack as he's talking to Michaela? This is all things he admitted. As he's talking to Michaela, he gets mad. He gets madder, I think he said. And then he decides to pull the knife out of the backpack and not just threaten her with a knife, but to stab her with it, and not stab her with her once. He admitted it three times, but there actually were 6 stab wounds in the neck and then 24 wounds overall. Well, does deliberation come in at any point on this? Because you don't necessarily go with the first stab. You keep going through all of them.
Judge Talon actually did a murder case, and he's familiar with all of these issues we discuss as murder attorneys. And, of course, those are bad facts for the defense, no doubt about it. But I will say this. A person who has not deliberated can still function. He can still do things. But if we look, we want to look at the quality of his thinking, not the fact that he's actually able to perform tasks. I would like to also address the felony murder issue. When a person kills someone in the course of, say, a robbery, the killing is a felony murder. And that's first-degree murder pursuant to Nevada statute. It is a fact that Hansen killed Reiner and took her purse. The state says, well, he took her purse, that's robbery, therefore this killing was felony murder. Sometimes there is a true robbery where a person robs somebody and during the course of the robbery he shoots or stabs the person or whatever, and that is true felony murder. But oftentimes, in many cases, a person kills somebody for a totally different reason and then as an afterthought takes something. And in this particular case, I submit that the law by the Nevada Supreme Court in Ney v. State is persuasive. And there the Nevada Supreme Court said, robbery does not support felony murder where the evidence shows that the accused kills a person and only later forms the intent to rob that person. So the felony murder issue in this case centers on whether he killed her because he wanted to rob her. I submit that that explanation is absurd. Obviously, he killed her for an entirely different reason and then happened to take her purse.
Judge Bulla has a question for you.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Mr. Brooks, the jury was able to consider different charges of murder.
That's correct.
And they did conclude that first-degree murder was an appropriate charge.
That's correct. And
found Mr. Hansen guilty. Are you, in essence, saying to us today that the first-degree murder charge should never have been submitted to the jury?
No, I'm not saying that. The jury had discretion here. I simply say that the evidence that exists in the record is insufficient to support first-degree murder. And I think that a just verdict would have been second-degree murder. Our hope in this case, if it is reversed, is to simply obtain a lesser criminal liability than first-degree murder.
Thank you.
As I said at the beginning, this is really a better post-conviction relief case than it is a direct appeal case, and I will stick with that position, and I appreciate your time, and it's an honor to be able to appear before you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brooks. We'll proceed to the respondent, the state of Nevada.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Again, my name is Michelle Sedano. I'm here on behalf of the Clark County District Attorney's Office and the respondents in this case.
So, you know, let me just jump here and ask the last about the last point that Mr. Brooks made. Your whole theory about this case, it appears at trial, is that this whole thing was, you know, the girlfriend dumped this guy, he's heartbroken, he starts stalking her. He goes to her house, he damaged her car a couple days before. On the day of the murder, he parks his car at some obscure place and jumps over the fence to kill her, right? How is that at all consistent with felony murder, that this was a robbery gone bad?
I can actually make this one very easy. I don't dispute Mr. Brooks's point on that. This case was not pled as felony murder. It was never argued as felony murder. The defendant was convicted at trial of two related offenses of burglary with use of a deadly weapon and robbery with use of a deadly weapon, the burglary being that he entered the garage where Ms. Reiner was positioned and attacked her in that garage. And because of the state's overall theory of the case, that was his intention at the time that he made that entry. As far as the robbery, there was evidence that he took items, including her purse and her cell phone, from her and disposed of those two items. However, the case was never pled as a felony murder. It was never argued to the jury as a felony murder. The state presented this case as a first-degree murder on the theory that it was a willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing.
Okay. I did not recall felony murder being one of the theories in the information, so you're affirmatively stating it was not.
It was not pled that way. It was never argued that way.
Okay. And the one other theory I didn't see there was a lying in wait. That also justifies first-degree murder, and the evidence was that he waited for her to get home from work. She parked in her garage, and he entered the garage, and then that's where the attack took place.
That is correct. I don't believe that that was pled either. It was pled as a straight first-degree murder under the theory that it was willful, right, deliberate, so, and premeditated.
So we are just focused on premeditation and deliberation then?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Your Honor, I would point out that counsel argued that it was ineffective for trial counsel to have conceded that the client, Mr. Hansen, at the time had committed these acts, and those things were conceded during the course of the trial. There was a suppression motion filed. We had an evidentiary hearing. That evidentiary hearing focused on the voluntariness of that statement, as well as whether or not those statements were obtained in violation of the Fifth and Sixth Amendments. Following that evidentiary hearing, the trial judge at the time found that all of that information was going to come in, found that the statement was voluntary, there was no Fifth Amendment issue, there was no Sixth Amendment issue, all of the statements were coming in. In the course of those statements, there were two interviews that Mr. Hansen gave with detectives. The first interview, he denied having any sort of involvement whatsoever in the death of Michaela Reiner, and he pointed the detectives to the fact that there had been some issues with her car and that her car alarm had been going off in the apartment complex, and he knew that there had previously been a note left on her vehicle, and told the detectives, go with whoever left that note. That's probably your suspect. And that was how that first interview ended. Your suspect, the person that killed Ms. Reiner, is probably whoever left that same note on her car. During the course of that second interview, which is several hours later that same day, he acknowledges that he is the person that killed Ms. Reiner, and he acknowledged that he was the person that had damaged not only Ms. Reiner's mother's vehicle that was parked in the spot, and that was the vehicle that had the fuck you alarm note on it, and the language that was found subsequently in a notebook. It appeared that there were practice notes that Mr. Hansen had completed prior to putting that note on Ms. Reiner's vehicle. And then he had also acknowledged damaging the vehicle that belonged to Ms. Reiner's new boyfriend. So with all of that already in his statements to the police and coming in as evidence in the case, that was essentially the cards that were dealt. That was the hand that was dealt to Mr. Hansen's attorney at the time. So it's not that he could come in and with a straight face dispute any of those things with the jury. That was already evidence that was coming in through his statements. So additionally, what we're looking at here then is just whether or not...
Was there evidence of the text messages sent by him? Was that in the record too? Supposedly from Japan, he sent messages talking about his mental health. And then later on, anything about having murderous thoughts or not wanting to live?
The text messages, he did indicate having the murderous thoughts. And there was a text message as well where he indicated he didn't want to be alone because he was having those murderous thoughts, and then he had sent stab emojis, it was a knife emoji, to a friend. That all occurred when he was back in Las Vegas. That was after he had returned from Japan. So that was in the month leading up to the murder. So what we actually had then in this case, there was conversations back and forth with family members and friends while he was still in Japan, but nothing while he was in Japan suggested that he was suicidal. He never expressed any suicidal ideations or feelings to anyone other than the victim in this case, Ms. Reiner. It was the state's theory at the time of trial that he was not telling his family that he was suicidal. He was not telling his friends that he was suicidal. He did not even report to Dr. Reutemann, the psychiatrist that was hired by the defense, that he was suicidal. The only person that he was saying anything about being suicidal to was Ms. Reiner. And he was saying that because he knew that she was a compassionate person and that even though they had broken up, she was still going to respond to him. She was still going to do everything that she could in her power to make sure that he was not going to act on those ideations.
So, can I ask a question regarding Dr. Reutemann?
Yes,
because he was the expert that the defense presented at trial, but he was unrebutted. There was no expert presented by the state. The state has the burden of proof. They chose not to apparently utilize an expert. With respect to Dr. Reutemann, doesn't his testimony, though, provide us a little bit of concern or cast doubt on Mr. Hansen's mental condition in terms of being able to have the requisite intent, notwithstanding the cross-examination in general terms?
And I would respond that no, Your Honor, it doesn't. So he acknowledged through cross-examination that people that are suffering from depressive episodes, people that are on Zoloft, which was the antidepressant that Mr. Hansen was taking at the time, people that have those conditions are still capable of forming the premeditation and deliberation required to commit crimes.
But doesn't there have to be a connection between having the requisite mental intent to plan a crime and this particular defendant having the requisite mental intent to commit first-degree murder?
There does have to be a nexus there, and there was, in fact, a nexus there. The nexus was very clear in this case because, as Judge Tao pointed out earlier, we're not looking at just an instance where he showed up the day of and his emotions got away from him. Dr. Reutemann said that the triggering event for Mr. Hansen was the breakup. The breakup took place June 15th of 2017. That's when Mr. Hansen starts texting family members and friends from Japan saying that Ms. Reiner had told him that she was dating someone else and that she had moved on. So we're looking at an event that takes place in June 15th as the trigger. The actual murder in this case does not take place until August 3rd of 2017. So this is going on for 6 weeks. It's not that he just shows up there at the time and is under such a heat of the passion or the moment at the time that there was this irresistible urge where he couldn't help but kill her. He knew all along through the course of that 6 weeks that that was what was going to happen. We have the text messages where he's saying he has these murderous thoughts. We have him going over there not once, but twice with a knife and vandalizing vehicles. And at least one of those occasions, the occasion with the boyfriend's vehicle that took place at the end of July in 2017, in that occasion, the boyfriend's vehicle is out in guest parking. However, there's $12,000 worth of damage that is done to that particular vehicle. One of the things that is important is that there are multiple stab wounds to or stab marks to that vehicle. So there's bumpers that are stabbed. The entire exterior of this car is keyed and stabbed. So it's a knife that is taken to this vehicle. And then there are pieces of that vehicle, the spoiler, windshield wipers, other things that go with that vehicle that are dumped out in the desert lot outside of the apartment complex. That desert lot is exactly where Mr. Hansen parked his vehicle and hopped over the wall the day of the actual killing. So we have not once, but twice, he goes back to that apartment complex, and instead of using the main entrance and coming in from the front street where there's surveillance cameras, where there are people that are going to see him driving past the office, where Ms. Reiner's apartment actually is, up in the front of that apartment complex, instead of coming in that way, he parks his vehicle around the back of the complex. Around the back of the complex, on two sides, it's just an empty lot. There's just desert. There's a road that drives back behind the complex that just dead ends. There's no property south. There's no property west. It's just this empty lot and this road that drives up there. So he goes that way. He hops the fence. He has a knife with him on multiple occasions before he gets to Ms. Reiner on August 3rd of 2017. So we're not looking at somebody that this day was incapable of forming the intent. We're looking at somebody that over the course of several days and several weeks has been taking actions that are consistent with someone who's premeditating and deliberating. In addition to what the evidence showed as far as those other prior incidents and the notes and the things that were left on those vehicles that also show a great deal of premeditation and deliberation, because there's a practice note for the incident with the mother's vehicle. And that notebook that has those practice notes are in Mr. Hansen's apartment. So it indicates that he's practicing that note at some point. He does that at his house, drives across town, places the note on a vehicle. So in addition to all of that premeditation, we also have a number of things that he told the detectives that day that show the premeditation and the deliberation. Mr. Hansen was described as nerdy and a car guy by a couple of his friends. Yet he leaves his cell phone at home on the day of the murder because he says that it needs to charge. What the detectives find later when they're searching that vehicle and then also the backpack that he was carrying with him on the day of the murder are a number of charging cables and USB cables that are in the vehicle itself and in the backpack. So it doesn't make any sense that the vehicle or that he would need to leave his phone at home because he needs to charge it when in fact he's got all these abilities and capabilities of charging that phone within the vehicle. Yet instead of bringing the phone with him, he leaves it at his house, and he drives across town. 5:30 in the afternoon, on a Thursday afternoon in the middle of summer, when it's light out, he goes to this very safe apartment complex, and even though he's comfortable leaving his phone at home, he brings with him this backpack that has a large knife in it, and he feels the need to carry those things with him into the complex to confront Ms. Reiner. He doesn't tell Ms. Reiner that he's coming, and again, instead of coming in through the front of the complex, he parks behind the complex and hops the wall. At this time, when he's coming in, the complex is open during normal business hours. You don't need any sort of gate code or any access to get in. You can just drive right through the gates and park up near Ms. Reiner's apartment. That's not what he does. He stands outside, he waits for her to come in, and then when she shows up in her apartment complex and she parks in the garage, he attacks her immediately. And we know that he attacks her immediately because there's no blood on the bottom of her shoes, and she's only stabbed initially in from the neck and the upper chest upwards. So if she's standing up at the time that she's attacked, there should be blood on the bottom of her shoes, and there should also be blood in that very tight enclosed garage area, but there is none. That indicates that he attacks her immediately and knocks her down before he starts actually stabbing her, so that there's no fight, there's no argument that takes place the way that he alleged that there was. Additionally, he tells the detectives that he had brought additional clothing with him. He tells the detectives that he had a pair of old white off-brand tennis shoes that he was wearing at the time of the killing. And that's important because those were shoes that he could not drive in. They had big soles, they were uncomfortable, he was physically unable to drive his car. So he gets over to Ms. Reiner's house, parks in the back of the complex, puts on shoes that he's not capable of driving in, and then goes to confront her. After the killing, he takes those shoes off, and we know that he changes clothes. He describes for the detectives that he's wearing a blue t-shirt and some black basketball shorts. But then shortly after the murder, he goes to a friend at work, and the friend describes him as wearing a white t-shirt and blue jeans. So we know that he's brought with him this entire change of clothes, this backpack with this knife, and he's not brought with him any sort of cell phone or any way of contacting Ms. Reiner. So it's clear that he's premeditated and he's deliberated. And I know that I'm running out of time, so what I want to leave this court with is the fact that here on appeal, this court or any court that is reviewing this case is not at liberty to sit as a 13th juror. It's not this court's determination of whether or not this court believes that the case was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The jury found that it was. The jury found that this was willful, deliberated, and premeditated killing of Ms. Reiner. So what this court is simply looking at on appeal is whether any rational trier of fact could have gotten to that conclusion. And there was ample evidence of premeditation, deliberation, and willfulness in that killing. So I would ask this court to affirm the jury's verdict and return an affirmation supporting that conviction of first-degree murder.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Sedano.
Thank you.
Mr. Chen and Mr. Brooks.
I did not reserve rebuttal, Your Honor.
Right. Okay. This matter then will